Hey everybody, this week we welcome in a little bit of festivities with the Thanksgiving classic that will guarantee to make you cry at the end. We watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Now, if you guys are interested in getting more myopia in your life, you can join the Patreon where we have riffs and we have extra episodes and we have all sorts of stuff. If you're interested in Bond, that's all behind the paywall now, so you have to join the Patreon. But still, if you can't swing it, I understand. It's been a weird year. But follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Thanks, guys. And we're thankful for all of our fans out there.
Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Welcome to Thanksgiving. Welcome to everything. This is a time when you should be listening to podcasts rather than family because family sucks. I'm host Nick Hoffman, riffer on Cineprov, and panelist on the show that I do, which no one listens to. And on panel we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I also have a credit card to a big and tall men's shop somewhere in the Northwest.
Jeremy.
And I'm Candace. I'm here from Lipstown Dixie and Cineprov, and I'm here for the bar tonight. And of course, Nick Hoffman's hot wife.
Girl.
Just saying.
I mean, if anyone's going to have a hot wife, it's either me or Candace.
It's
so, regardless, we have to watch the tearjerker emotional situation, which is the perfect metaphor for traveling during the holidays, as all of us have done, because sometimes you go to college and realize family matters sometimes.
I object to your phrasing, we had to watch this. This was great. This was a great movie.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is our film tonight from 1987, starring John Candy and
It stars one of the five neat guys along with one of the two wild and crazy guys. Yes. That's who the cast is.
Yes. I got to tell you, I love this film as a child. But as an adult, it was very special. It was a whole nother viewing because I think by the time we're grown-ups, we've all experienced things like dealing with planes canceling and our luggage being lost and problems with our car rentals. And it was a very different experience than when I watched it when I was like 13 years old. I was like, oh, this is a funny film. As an adult, like 1 week ago when I watched this, and then now an hour ago since I got drunk and watched this, it was really emotional, and I cried really hard, and it was really sweet.
Before we get into the movie proper, I do have a question for everybody on the horn. What is the worst travel experience you ever had?
Dude, man, bro, guy, buddy, bro, man, guy.
His name is Daniel.
Who? So right before, you may not have heard of this, but there's something called the coronavirus.
What? Sounds made up to me.
A coronavirus, like the beer is spreading disease.
Fake news.
Well, we had to fly a tragic airline called Southwest, and we got delayed before, after, the plane broke down, it was awful. And yet, we will probably have to fly them again when we fly, because that's how flights work.
It is. All right, what about you, Jeremy?
Let's see. The short answer is, I was going to Poland to see the first time Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax played the same show.
Who the fuck went to Poland?
Me.
Please continue.
I was scheduled to arrive 24 hours before the concert. I showed up 5 hours into the concert.
Okay. Well, you know, that's all right. Better late than pregnant.
All right.
I saw one of the bands.
Okay, Jeremy, I'm going to call bullshit on that. There is no way Metallica and Megadeth ever played at the same concert.
They've done that a lot of times.
Dave Mustaine does that?
Dave Mustaine, above all else, he wants money.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, money. I love that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. What was your worst travel experience, Daniel?
Ooh, I was, it wasn't quite Christmas, but it was a couple weeks before, and I had gone up to Boston, which was fun. But then I showed up at the airport the day I was supposed to head back, and all the flights have been canceled. I ended up in that airport for like, Jesus Christ, 9 hours, 10 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically...
Okay. I, too, dealt with something like that. I was trying to go to my friend in Montana, in Missoula, by the way, go Grizz. And I got stuck having to sleep in the airport at Hartsville, Atlanta. And it was garbage, and it made me feel sad. And the only way it could have gotten worse is the fact that my fucking luggage went to Utah.
Well, you know so something there, Candace.
Good. Yeah.
If you were going to Missoula, you should have just asked me, David Lynch. I'm from Missoula. I've got family up there. I could have hooked you up, but well, apparently you didn't ask.
I didn't. So I will say, sorry, Dave, and go like go Grizz, which, by the way, is the team in Missoula, Montana. And I finally did get to my friend, by the way, but it took 3 weeks later. And I had to sleep in a cabin in the woods in fall. And I live in Atlanta, so I don't understand the great outdoors. And it was cold and sad.
Was there black coffee there? If you were in Missoula, there had to be black coffee.
No, but there was a lot of booze, so I made it work, you know. But, I mean, there were better places, like, obviously, this recording studio. So
I don't know what we're even talking about.
We're talking about the worst trips you've ever taken, Nick Hoffman.
No, no, no.
So what do you think?
That.
You think?
It was almost a movie.
That's right. It was Plane, Trains, and Automobiles of 1987, starring Steve Martin, John Candy. Let's get into the film. Let's see. Who should we pick? Who's the most responsible adult?
Jeremy.
Jeremy.
I think that says more about all of you than it does about me.
Please give the synopsis of the film, Jeremy.
I am a doctor.
He is a doctor.
Yes.
I've read the doctor.
And, well, hello, yeah. Nicholas. I've been feeling some weird pains in my rectum. Do you mind checking those out?
I've read the Civil War dissertation. Thank you very much. So,
beautiful liar.
Thank you. Go ahead. Go ahead, Jeremy. We're listening.
So Steve Martin is trying to get from New York to Chicago for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Because
his family fucking lives there, Nick, obviously. Please continue.
Yeah. I mean, that's the short answer. But he misses his plane. And because of that, well, lots of things.
He doesn't miss his plane. There's a snowstorm in Chicago that... cancels every flight into O'Hare.
Thank you, Daniel, for being the responsible member and knowing the actual plot of the film.
Amazingly, I'm the only one who hasn't drunk anything.
It's true.
Yeah.
But you have shot up a lot of heroin there, Jeremy.
That is true.
I mean, so much heroin, y'all. You don't even know.
Well, and since this is John Hughes, we should mention it's the same dude who wrote Home Alone. And it's only the, Catherine O'Hara version of Home Alone. That's what this
basically,
is.
Basically, yeah.
By the way, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy are the new narratives of the Canada version in Epcot. So if you want to see the movie about Canada in Epcot, the 3D film...
what you should do is go check out reruns of SCTV.
Well, or any of the Chris Guest movies.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, my God.
I know Eugene Levy is a bunch of those. I can only think of, like, one or two that Catherine O'Hara was in. She was in...
Best of Show, right?
Best in Show, and For Your Consideration.
Best in Show may be the best... One of my top five favorite films of all time. When they... The Busy Bee thing, I make that reference all the time, by the way.
So. Get her Busy Bee!
Where's the Busy Bee?
Anyway, we cut you off, Jeremy.
Back to the film. Please, Jeremy, you were really riveting us with that dissertation about the film. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's a road trip movie. It's more about the journey than the destination. It's
That makes sense. Do you mind if I
go for it?
Yeah. Okay.
No, please go ahead, Diego.
Okay, so Steve Martin is an ad executive, or at least higher up in an advertising company.
God apples, uh-huh.
Who who's in New York at the start of the movie, and he has to get home to Chicago for Thanksgiving because he promised his kids and his wife.
Yeah.
And so he tries to.
Does he love his kid and his wife? Just ask.
Who knows?
He seemed to, although that's out of character for the sort of yuppie that he is. But,
what? Oh
anyway, he meets up with a guy named Del Griffith, who is a shower curtain salesman, who's not necessarily obnoxious, just kind of outside of the 1980s yuppie world.
He's just a little awkward, like on the spectrum kind of awkward.
And it's John Candy, who, Jesus Christ.
He melts my heart. I love him.
26 years, I think, since he passed away, which it still feels like yesterday. Anyway,
I'm going to look it up while you're still talking. Go ahead.
Anyway, they try and get on a plane to Chicago. They can't land in Chicago because of a snowstorm. They end up in Wichita. And from there, both Del and Neil, I think, Neil Page is Steve Martin's character, are trying to get back to Chicago so that Neil can have Thanksgiving dinner with his family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and, I mean, the game about him is the two of them are in some ways the same. They're both businessmen trying to get home. The problem is one doesn't actually have a home.
Spoilers.
Right? God, Nick, you're such a bitch.
I didn't say either what that meant or who was whom.
Well, the problem is that...
By the way, John Candy died in 1994. I just looked it up.
Like I said, 26 years.
Oh, shit, you're right.
Candace is trying to do that.
I am, well, like 12 vodkas in. It's really complicated. Daniel, thank you for being the moral compass of the show. We appreciate it.
Oh, good Lord. We're all going to hell then. But true. Anyway, the whole point of this movie, and I said it was a problem earlier, but it's not. It's the point. Del is like just a normal middle-class 80s person, right? He seems weird. He seems awkward, but that's just, I mean, he's the sort of person who would take the bus to get where he needed to go, which there are plenty of people who still do that. And I know I sound like I'm being condescending. I don't mean to be, but Neil is just like the upper class yuppie. He is just so disconnected from the rest of the world. Which,
I think that's a perfect description, actually.
And I think the joke is on Neil. It's not on Del.
Yeah.
Because Del's the one who's smart. He's the one who knows actually how to do what they need to do in this movie.
No, you're right. Del is the person that needs the moral compass. And Del is the person that is that one. And he's someone who's lost it all, which we discovered at the end of the film. But he still keeps a positive attitude and helps him realize his, you know, the good things in life.
He also knows all the lyrics to the Flintstones theme song.
Which obviously makes him a good person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, what do you think, Nick? Nick is a little broken up, y'all. I gotta say, I saw him cry a little bit at the end of the film. He was like hugging his wife, and like tears were streaming like a little bit, only out of the left eye. I don't know what that means, but I'm just saying it was happening.
The ending to this movie is fucking heartbreaking, but we'll get there.
It's rough. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Well, I mean, like the whole point of this movie is, I mean, there's two people, right? Yeah. Like it's the man in the gray flannel suit, right? Like it's Steve Martin trying to play the game, and then John Candy, tragically the one who knows real life. But the thing about real life is that it's loss. It's tragedy. Like,
by the way, I plan on doing John Candy's character at Dragon Con. I'm gonna find the print to those like Hawaiian blue pattern pajamas. And I think everyone in Cineprov should wear them as Hawaiian pajamas. And we would be like super cute. And we could enter a contest and win a prize.
I'm gonna hire somebody to be Edie McClurgan just going, you're fucked.
Do it. Do it.
Okay.
I'm here for it.
Let's rewind a bit. I mean,
all right.
We've introduced these characters, you're and right. We've said the opening, which is with Steve Martin in New York. But the whole thing that starts this is he's got to get a cab to, I assume, LaGuardia?
I don't know. He's, all I know is that Steve Martin is a douche. And he's trying to get back to his wife, who already, by the way, has concerns that he might be cheating on her because he's not at home enough, yada, yada, yada. Which, by the way, I gotta tell you, I think she's kind of a cunt for that. Because if I were a woman and I could live with my fucking three kids in a house like that and not have to fucking work, I would be like, thank you, honey, for fucking doing your job. And if you were cheating on me at the same time, I'd be like, well, that's unfortunate, but at least I got a fucking house to come home to.
So these are her words, not any of ours.
Except for mine. They're totally my fucking words. As a woman who has to earn her fucking keep, I would say that, yeah, those are my words. I gotta say, this is probably 12 vodkas in. So please continue, Daniel. Well, this is a great synopsis you're giving.
All right, so the whole opening is like them in a meeting with that dickhead of a boss who can't make a decision about an ad campaign. And
God, apples.
Let's skip ahead a little bit with Steve Martin trying to pick up a cab during rush hour in New York. And
where is the Uber? Where is the Lyft? I want to know.
This was 1987.
Oh, okay.
That didn't exist.
What?
You might have to explain technology, Daniel.
I don't get it.
Wasn't the subway still a thing though?
I don't know.
The subway in New York, the metro system in New York doesn't go to LaGuardia. I don't know why. It's fucking ridiculous, but... Anyway, there's like several scenes of him trying to get a cab, including where he is racing Kevin Bacon to get a cab.
Which means he's only 7 steps away from Kevin Bacon, which, because he sees Kevin Bacon, he's only 1 step away from Kevin Bacon. How many steps away from Kevin Bacon are each of you?
6.
A million.
What are you, Jeremy?
I'd have to check. Maybe a couple.
I think I'm 2 steps away.
Why? I'm sure.
Yeah, because all of my friends are on all the Marvel fucking movies. They all do sound for them, so I'm sure one of those cunts have, like,
oh, okay, then
with someone near Kevin Bacon.
Then 3, then, since I know
done.
You.
Hashtag.
All right, so...
High five, bitches.
One thing that happens is he tries to pay this lawyer $75 to get a cab in a rush hour because
the
lawyer
hailed it first. Is that a lot of money in 1987?
Oh, big time.
Yes.
I mean, it's a lot of money now. I wouldn't just pay a random stranger $75 just for permission. Anyway, that's how we're introduced to Del Griffith, because while they're haggling, he gets the cab, and he's the one who puts his steamer trunk in the taxi, and then he drives away. Actually, you know what? Even before that, there's that scene where Neil trips over the trunk while he's chasing Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
So anyway, already Del is a thorn in everyone's side in this movie.
I agree.
Okay, I can keep going.
Listen, I'm very enthralled by what you're saying. I love the fact that you stopped and you looked at your ring pop as if you were like, should I keep going? And you were like, yes, I'm a fucking god. Keep going.
Oh, well, with this ring pop, which is a blue raspberry ring pop, I believe.
It's like fucking Thanos over there. Your fucking ring
pop. Yeah, that didn't pick up. Anyway, after a while, they both manage to get to LaGuardia, and there's that whole scene where they actually are finally introduced to each other, where John Candy is reading porn at the gate to the
By the way, I did look that up on Google. It is not real porn. If it were, I would have read it aloud as a Patreon bonus.
It's not real porn, but it's literally called porn. The Canadian Mounted.
I mean, you don't know. That could mean like elk and shit. I mean, they're unique.
So he was reading bestiality porn?
Yes, as far as we know.
By the way, I'd like to take this time to remind you that FWA, Free Week in Atlanta, still plans on going on in May of next year. Yeah. So, you know, enjoy. There you go.
Well, and I will also say here, there's no, like, inherent sexuality Like, nothing is more awkward than a dude reading a Playboy in the middle of, like, a mall.
You don't think that John Candy just exudes raw sexual tension in every scene he's in?
Anyone who is funny and adorable is immediately sexy to women. I'm just pointing that out.
I mean, question mark. I've never been sexy once.
I'm just saying. I'm eyeing up everyone at the table, including Jeremy. In fact, especially Jeremy. Jeremy's horrified.
Yeah.
Jeremy's like, oh my God, women are talking to me. I should stop immediately.
Oh, jeez, there's a girl talking to me. Oh, God.
You're so silly. But no, I agree with you. This is such a cute, sweethearted film. Like you said, we're all the way up to the film where everything is going awry, and Sean Candy is not malicious in any way. He's just sweetly adorable and inconvenient.
He's just clueless, ultimately.
Yes, and everyone has that friend that's like slightly an inconvenience, but yet you love them so much that you put up with the bullshit.
Oh, Kraus. No, I'm going to edit that out. There, Nick.
Kraus.
Like,
oh, okay.
I'm going to edit that out.
Okay, good. Edit that.
I thought you were going to say Quinn.
What?
I thought you were going to say Quinn.
Oh, shit, no, Matt is adorable. Oh. Can't help it that he's strangely awkward.
Oh,
he's so precious.
No.
I ran into him at a convention Conjuration last year, and someone was like, wow, that's a really weird guy, and I was like, I think I know him, like, intimately. I was like, he's kind of precious. I can't help it. I love him.
Note to self, edit all that out. We don't need that.
Don't edit it. Matt Quinn, we love you. You're precious. Continue.
Okay, so one of the big things about this movie that we haven't mentioned is it was both written and directed by John Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Now, what else did John Hughes do?
Oh, well, goodness gracious. He directed and wrote The Breakfast Club.
Okay, I've heard of it.
I believe he wrote and directed Uncle Buck.
Oh, not so into it, but that's a John Candy classic. Continue.
Oh, geez. He also, I think, I'm not sure if he directed it, but I know he wrote Weird Science.
Oh, shit, that's a great movie. I'm down for this. Can we all wear bras on our head?
You mean you're not already?
Well, she'd have to take it off them titty girls.
It's true. It's mainly because it's too complicated at this point.
I also believe he wrote and directed 16 Candles.
I've never seen that film, but I know everybody loves it. And they're like fucking all for it.
You know who John Hughes is
at
this point.
Yeah, he loves rom-com kind of bullshit. Yeah.
Well, he loved because he passed away like, I think, 11 years ago, but...
Then we should have a moment of silence for John Hughes. Everyone, 10 seconds. 10, 9, fuck it. All right, we're done. Good job. Good job, everybody. You really thought about him.
He's the guy in Dogma who created Shermer, Illinois, but then Jay and Silent Bob had to find out there is no Shermer, Illinois.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but Alanis Morissette is God, right? Because I've been acting as such.
Are you just describing Dogma, or are you just stating a fact?
Both.
Okay, there you go. Well, I mean, in this movie, John Hughes obviously was more used to writing about youths. He was more used to writing about high school life, and I think this is maybe the only film where he's like trying to tackle what adulthood was like in the 1980s. I think he also wrote or co-wrote She's Having a Baby, but this is way more him.
Well, and I mean, Rigel, did he direct this one?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
This also might be the most, how do I put this? All of his movies have maturity. This is the
Weird
most,
Science?
Well, but it's
Chet's a giant shit.
No, how do I put this? It's character development. Right?
Yeah.
This one is the most about character development. Yeah. Right?
I wish John Candy had gotten an Oscar nomination for this movie.
He should have. Because I gotta tell you, okay. So I know we're going to, like we always do, we're going to go through each of the first, second act, third act, whatever the fuck, you know, Daniel took notes kind of thing. But I got to tell you, as a child watching this, it was enjoyable. But as an adult, it was really, really profound. And I actually cried at the end of the film. Oh. Both 2 days ago when I watched it privately, because I didn't want the guys to see me cry like a little bitch. But then I ended up crying with all the guys. They saw me cry like a little bitch. Because it was really beautiful. But it's okay, because Daniel and I, he held me. And we cried together. And it was okay. So please continue.
My shirt is still stained from your tears. But anyway. Let's go ahead and skip ahead a bit.
Let's do it.
Where part of the whole thing is, after the snowstorm, both Del and Neil end up in Wichita, Kansas. That's the safest place to land. So that's what really starts the journey, where they have to be together and they have to try and get back to Chicago.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, their time in the hotel together, if you've ever shared a hotel with someone during a convention, like Dragon Con, this is exactly what it's like.
So you've washed yourself with John Candy's sock before.
I have. The bathroom is a fucking mess. There are no motherfucking towels. The person who's supposed to be sharing a bed with you has spilt shit all the fucking over it.
And then you've woken up, and then there's some random person's hand between your butt cheeks.
Yes, except for the random part. I mean, I probably knew them beforehand. Not that I knew them well, but at least knew their name. And her name was Naomi. But please continue.
Oh.
And she was a drag queen. But it was great because she liked staying up all night long, and I liked and sleeping during the day, and I was the opposite. So she was the perfect bed partner, and she was amazing. Please continue.
I want to turn it back over to Nick. I mean, what do you think about this movie?
When?
You know what? During the scene where they're in that hotel in Wichita after they've taken that long cab ride that Steve Martin has to pay for, and then they, like, you know, they're just having to share a bed.
I mean, honestly, the problem with this movie is not the pacing, it's a tragedy.
The tragedy is
what's
problem?
The tragedy of it?
The tragedy of this movie is that exact scene, right? Like,
well, I don't think it's a tragedy necessarily.
No, it's a tragedy, especially if you know the ending, right? It's
Well, let's pretend you don't know the ending. Then what do you think is bad about the scene?
It's all about connection.
Okay.
The problem with human connections is that they are bleak, endless. Like, you know what you want when you end up in a bar in the middle of nowhere?
God damn.
We're
some existential
on the
shit right
to
now.
Nowhere.
You just want humanity for half a second. Like,
wow. Are we doing like the Star Trek reboot? Jesus
Christ. No, to me, it's not anything bleak. It's just that people want humanity, right?
I agree with that.
Well, I think people, I think this is about personal connections and just how desperate people are for them, even when at first it seems annoying, because Neil, Steve Martin, hates John Candy at
it's
first.
True.
There's that whole meltdown they have where John Candy's trying to clear his sinuses in the
room. That's the worst scene. It drives me crazy.
Well, the scene beforehand where...
I slept with a person one time who, at Dragon Con, no one told me had horrible sleep apnea, which, by the way...
Hey.
Someone who has sounds like they're fucking choking in the middle of the night.
You promised...
It was so scary.
You promised me you'd never talk about that.
It's not you, Daniel. You can sleep with me next year, but... I'm telling you, this person was a great friend, and I was so scared for them the whole time. I was like, why did no one tell me this? Why didn't anyone tell me it was going to be this way?
That's not even.
And that's exactly what this film is like.
That's not even the best throat clearing. We'll get to that in a second, but
yeah.
They're in a hotel together, and obviously Steve Martin's pissed off, and then he gets that meltdown where he's just like, you are one of the stupidest, worst people, most boring people. Yeah.
So when Steve Martin rips into him like that, I legitimately feel sad for John Candy. He does, at that moment, he should have won, like, best supporting actor in a film. Because he looks legitimately sad and torn up by what Steve Martin is saying to him. When he tells him, I like me, my wife likes me, my customers like me. I would tell you, I legitimately, like, bonded with him at that moment where I was like, I like me, my husband likes me, I feel like my audience likes me. And I was, like, crying at that.
Well, I mean, most dumb comedies, like, if this was an Adam Sandler movie, that Steve Martin's rant about being, how he was a Chatty Cathy doll that was pulling his own string, that would have been the setup to, like, a dumb punchline, but that's not how the movie treats it. John Candy is visibly hurt, like you said, and then he gives this great response to it that is heartbreaking.
It's an amazing montage. It's a sad montage. It's that moment where you're like, you suddenly side with John Candy, and you're like, Steve Martin, you're a piece of shit. And you would never say that about Steve Martin in any film. And suddenly it's real. So.
Well, I think you're right. This is ultimately about how these two characters bounce off each other, but they're not archetypes. You know, John Candy isn't necessarily just the dumb Costello stooge, and Steve Martin isn't the straight Abbott figure. They've got personalities. They've got backgrounds. It makes perfect sense that Steve Martin would react the way he reacts in that scene, but then it also makes perfect sense that John Candy would be that wounded.
I agree. What do you think, Jeremy?
Jeremy's
like weeping at the end of the table. So go ahead, just, you know, dry your tears. Tell us what you think.
I think the interesting about this is, at least for me, is I don't like either of them.
What?
You know what? You don't have to. That's the whole thing.
It's true.
Like, I've been on planes with people like John Candy's character, and I want to throw myself off. And, like, personally, I would prefer Steve Martin because I'm more like him, and I wouldn't say anything. We would just mind our own businesses, and we'd be great.
You'd sleep on a shoulder, wouldn't you?
Ew, no. But I also would not want him bitching at me like he does. So both are people I probably wouldn't get along with.
What do you think, Nicholas?
Well, I mean, it's a classic id versus, like, ego, right?
Sure.
I mean, the problem is that, like, John Candy is everything we want to be. He's passionate, positive, and the problem is Steve, he's realistic.
Yes, and unfortunately, he's also the successful one. I mean, so he's what we're supposed to be, but then you feel sad about what we're supposed to be.
You know what? I think it's the other way around, because John Candy's the one who can relate to the people on their journey, be it the motel clerks, be it the random people that he's...
That's why he says his customers like him. I mean, because he's the average Joe, and he's the person you can relate to.
Whereas Steve Martin is just a yuppie. He's basically Patrick Bateman without the body count.
Right? Oh my God. That's true. So, all right. So, scene two. Where are we at? Has the car exploded yet?
No, no.
Fucking no.
We're at Wichita, and they both leave and get to where the nearest train is. Thanks to the motel's manager's son, Owen. Mm-hmm.
Best scene in the movie for me.
Oh my God.
Dylan Baker is amazing.
Which, yes, I'm into a lot of freaky deaky shit. Spitting is not one of them. So the minute Owen spits, he's out. That's done. We're done for that scene.
What did you think about the fact that his first baby came out sideways his wife didn't scream?
Listen, I've been to Frolicon, so I'm not going to judge her, right? Like, maybe she's down with that. But the spitting, that loses me.
Oh, yeah, like when he spits in his hand and then shakes Steve Martin.
That is so fucking upsetting to me. I literally screamed out loud during the film when we were watching that.
Well, either way, it leads to Owen and his Wonder Woman of a wife driving to a train station in, I think, Stubbsville.
That's right, because the train they were hoping to take only takes hogs and cattle. So now they were having to go to another train station, which is 45 minutes away. 40 miles away, which is essentially 45 minutes.
So something, I don't know if this was meant to be or not, but all right. So this is jumping ahead, but what do they take in the end to get back home? A milk truck.
Yeah.
So either way, you know, they could have taken a cattle train, but they end up taking a milk truck. So.
Well, they didn't know it would lead to a milk truck. I mean.
It always leads to a milk.
No,
so yeah, cows were the way no matter what.
I've had plenty of Saturday evenings where it leads me to a milk truck. But anyway.
I feel like that's a fans only, and I want to know more later. But continue.
Girl, we'll talk about it off
girl,
mic. But anyway.
Yes, queen.
Anyway, they end up in Stubbsville, and they both get on a train, and what happens? The train breaks down, and they have to... well, at that point, they've separated.
Yes.
Del's in one car, Neil's in another, and Neil thinks it's all over, but then the train busts down. They have to walk to the highway together.
Yeah, which I have to tell you, if you've ever read the Megabus, they don't make you walk through a field. But if they did, I mean, someone would help you with your fucking luggage. But they didn't help Del with his luggage. So obviously Steve Martin has to step in, help Del with his giant fucking case, which is the only thing he
has
left of his remnants of a life.
The steamer trunk that he's
yes. got. Yes. Oh my God, that trunk is so cute. It's like some fucking shit from Harry Potter.
It's not like. I'm pretty sure it is some shit from Harry Potter.
I'm sure some fucking Fantastic Beasts and Johnny Depp's going to jump out of there. Just saying.
Well, and again, I've flown Ryanair. You're like three counties away. Like, that's the game.
Yep.
I'd like to point out that Daniel's still licking his ring pop. It's mildly
a juicy
seductive.
Jewel of flavor.
But I'm trying to stay focused and do this thing because I'm a professional. So please continue.
Oh, you're asking me to continue even though you're the professional?
Yes.
Well, the train scene is actually not too long with the movie. They end up, you know, at the highway, and then they have to take a bus, which is where you get one of the best scenes where Neil and Del are just watching the other bus passengers, and that's where you get the John Candy singing the Flintstones.
Yeah, which is adorable. It shows that John Candy is a man of the people. And that, you know, Del is singing a song, which is a traditional Christmas song, but nobody knows it.
Three coins in a fountain. It's a Frank Sinatra song.
And, you know, John Candy singing just something you would have heard off TV. People love it. They're having a good time, and they're singing along. And that just proves that you don't have to be high class to be loved by a lot of.
Well, it kind of reminds me of when I was in high school and just I was in computer lab class. I think we were trying to learn HTML back in 2005, and then somebody started singing All the Small Things and everybody joined in.
My God, I was already graduated and working a real fucking job by then, Daniel. Jesus Christ, I feel like I'm robbing the cradle, like eyeing you up now.
Well, la-de-freaking-da!
I'd like to say that impression is much better than the Ace Ventura ones that I listened to each of y'all.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They were bad. But I still love y'all. Continue.
Well, I just do have to say, in terms of Ace Ventura impersonations, Nick's impersonation made him.
Yeah.
Hey, loser! Four more years of Jim Carrey on SNL, but apparently. Anyway, we get a scene with them on the bus, and then once again, they try to separate each from each other, and then we get a rental car scene that I know, Candace, you were a big fan of.
I was, because as a kid, it's a funny scene, but as an adult, we've all been through that moment where you went through a lot of hassle, gone to do a thing, it's totally fallen through, and then you want to fucking punch a cunt in their face. And that's exactly what happened with that rental scene. And I think it was hilarious. It was so well done.
So what happens is Steve Martin tries to rent a car, but when he gets to the lot, the car's gone. And the bus leaves him stranded there. The bus that's taking him out to the lot. So he has to walk back to, I guess, wherever the airport was.
Which is really far, according to the film.
Well, I'm not sure how far it was. It was just an arduous journey where he's having to walk down the highway.
I gotta say, it was only like 5 steps in the film when you're watching it. But when they're when you're watching actually Steve Martin do the whole deal, it's like as if it were a mile and a fucking half away. And he accidentally throws away his ticket in a fit of fury, which, by the way, if you're that fucking pissed, hold on to the ticket. That's all I'm going to say.
Although this scene does give us another John Hughes moment when Edie McClurg shows up.
Is that the secretary from the Ferris Bueller movies?
Yes.
God, she's amazing in this film. She's so funny. She's like every front desk medical person you've ever fucking met. Just saying.
Well, Nick, I'm Ian McClurg, that whole scene. What did you, have you ever had that thing happen to you?
Which thing?
The rental car thing.
You know,
or
the thing
like
where
that.
No one gives a shit about what you're trying to ask for, and then you work really hard, and then they don't pay any attention to it.
Dude, I've rented so many cars over the years. Like, the problem with real life at that point is that cars are supposed to take you places. And the idea that someone's going to be like, no, you don't deserve to go. At that point, you're like twitchy. You have the DT shakes. You're just like, I have been in a plane for 6 hours. How can I not leave?
Damn, Nick, that's some existential shit. I just thought they lost my reservation. God damn.
Well, I mean, they look at my wife and
yes.
They're like, I've lost your reservation.
Yeah.
? Cleavage.
I gotta tell you, I don't think the reservation has anything to do with your wife. I think you're drunk and your wife's cleavage is appealing.
But that's what I'm saying. They're like, something has gone wrong. A beautiful person is over there. For me, I'm just like, I am an angry dad right now. Aww. I need a bagel with cream cheese and some disappointment.
Oh, shit. I love bagels with cream cheese and disappointment. Am I an angry dad?
Am
I a daddy?
No.
I'm just 99.
One day you'll grow into a daddy.
No, someday if you work really hard, you two will be a daddy.
I'm just 99% sure he just called me the beautiful person over there, so I'm...
You are, Daniel. Oh.
Okay.
And like a fart in the breeze, she's gone.
All right, so we're at the scene with the rental car, and Steve Martin goes out, and that's the scene where the... who is it? One of the valets at the airport, like, punches Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, we can fast forward at this point because, like, it's like a hilarious series of misunderstandings.
Except for that valet scene because John Candy once again shows up in a rental car and almost runs over Steve Martin. He's like, what the hell are you doing? And then...
Everything you've ever experienced if you've rented with fucking Enterprise or if you've gotten your fucking car rental from a Groupon. Or any kind of, like, fucking discount bullshit. Because then you realize it's a fucking sham and you can't get your money back. The end.
Yep.
And everyone was sad.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, the rest of this is building to a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Well, oh, right. Because we haven't gotten to the scene where they're driving between the two 18-wheels yet.
That's a Jean-Claude Van Damme scene.
No, it's not a Jean-Claude Van Damme scene. Oh. It's like a Werner Herzog or a Louis Benuel scene.
Yeah?
Okay, fine. Jeremy.
What do you think, Jeremy? Yeah.
To the very end?
Yeah, right where, you know, remember where Jim Candy does a split between the two trucks? Then keep going.
We should get to the very end quite yet. We should at least get what's going on during that highway travel, which I think Jeremy can catch us up to.
I'm just enjoying watching the drunk people talk.
who?
You know what? You know what? That is a perfect summary of this movie right here.
It is.
So they, John Candy and Steve Martin.
I'll be good. I'll be good for the rest of the time.
They share a rental car together, and there's a lot of adventures. I mean, there's a scene where John Candy gets his parka caught in the door rollers and the seat recliners.
That is brilliant physical comedy.
It is.
I'm really all about physical comedy, and there's not a lot of physical comedians left. Obviously, John Candy's one of them. He has since passed.
And well, he's not left then.
I know, but that's what I just said. He passed already, and it makes me sad. I feel like if you had to recast this right now, Will Ferrell would be the closest thing, or Jack Black, you could get to his character, because they, too, embrace physical comedy in the way that he did. Even though I fucking hate Jack Black with the heat of 1,000 motherfucking suns.
I heard a rumor.
But I love Will Ferrell.
I heard a rumor they're going to remake this movie.
Are you serious?
Can you guess who the cast is?
If you tell me Jack Black, I will come across this table and beat you in the fucking face.
It's not Jack Black, but it's probably going to piss you off just as much.
Who is it?
Okay, so the Steve Martin character is going to be Will Smith.
Okay, I'm not against that. He's a funny guy.
The John Candy character is going to be Kevin Hart.
I knew you were going to say Kevin Hart. Ugh.
I love how everything just went quiet because
I'm not
stupidest fucking idea.
I'm not totally against it. Kevin Hart is actually a really good comedian. He's very funny. I've actually met him in person. He's a nice guy. But it takes a certain comedian to convey this. I feel like you need a big comedian like Melissa McCarthy or someone like that to bring this kind of big character to life. So I'm just going to put it out there, or me. I'm just going to go and put me up for the lineup. I am available. You feel free to call me, agents. I am available. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. You can message me, 7893341145. Anyways, that being said.
So Candace is available.
I am available. I mean, I will make room in my schedule for you. But Kevin Hart, while extremely funny, I don't think is the John Candy character.
No, of course he's not.
No, continue.
Well, I mean, there's nothing really to continue beyond that. Just Steve Martin and John Candy sharing a rental car, and then they end up going the wrong way down a highway.
There's nothing funnier than when the other couple is yelling, "You're going the wrong way."
Oh, they're drunk.
Steve Martin looks at John Candy, and John Candy goes, "They're drunk. How would they know where we're going?" And I'm like, oh, shit, that totally makes sense.
And then, of course, they end up between two big rigs, and then they nearly destroy the car.
Totally brilliant. It's so funny. Oh, my God.
Well, and the last act is a tragic.
Oh, yeah, it sure is. Eventually, Steve Martin and John Candy do get to Chicago, where Steve Martin gets on the loop after, I think we said, the car gets destroyed because John Candy put a cigarette out in the back seat and then it burns.
That's true.
And they end up riding in the back of a big rig.
They do, and it's a dairy big rig.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, of course, the driver's got a little iffy thing about people riding in the cab with him, so they can't sit up there.
I would, too. Have you met people lately? They fucking suck.
You're not wrong, but...
You're not wrong.
Anyway,
I would like Candace riding with me. Just saying. But the rest of you bitches, you'd have to go in the trunk.
I've ridden in the trunk before. Anyway, it ends with Steve Martin and John Candy once again leaving each other. They're on a stop at the loop.
Yeah.
And then Steve Martin gets on the metro, mm-hmm. and he starts going over what John Candy was talking to him about, and this leads to a big twist.
Wow, and that is the big twist, and that Steve Martin comes to the understanding that John Candy may not have a family or a home, which is, y'all, it's really upsetting.
Well,
even sober, it's upsetting. And then when I was drinking, it was super upsetting, and I cried really hard.
The way they handle it in the movie, they go over a flashback to things that John Candy said, where he's like, "I haven't been home in years," and then the way they deal with it. It was Steve Martin going back and just not going, oh, you're homeless. Just like, Del, why are you here still at the train station?
I know.
Why aren't you going home?
You said you were going home.
Yeah, you said you were going home. Why are you here? And then that's when John
Candy, he says Marie's been dead for 8 years. That was it.
His wife.
Oh, my God.
His wife, he was talking about, and he's got, like, a photo of her that he's putting on every single nightstand in the hotel.
I can't.
Oh, man, that was just heartbreaking.
That was harsh, I gotta tell you. I mean, all right, so, Jeremy, are you married?
No.
Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
Oh, shit, my fucking mic broke. I'll fucking fix it.
Just take the mic out of the thing.
Yeah, you're right. Great. All right. So, Daniel, I know you're currently without a direct partner, correct? All right. So, Nick, you know, this is one of those moments where I feel kind of sad. I will never love my husband as much as Del loves his wife in this film. What do you think? Did this really, like, touch your heart?
I mean, it touched my heart. The problem with this movie is that we have an absent character.
Yeah.
Only works with John Candy, right?
Yeah.
You're right, yeah.
I mean, like, there's a lot of movies where there's an absent, like, love interest. Like, it's, like, the problem with Romeo and Juliet is that they both live. And they're and they're also both 14. And, like,
awkward.
Nothing is like an erection when you're 14. The problem
it's
is...
It's all fun and games till the Atlanta police show up at Dragon Con. Please continue.
This movie works because he's our age. Like, I mean, tragically, John Candy doesn't live to be 40, right?
44. He passed away from a heart attack when he was 44.
Are you serious?
Yes.
And I mean, like,
I'm sad by that.
I'm a svelte.
He was a big guy.
But, like, that's what this game is, right? Like, it's about a man who didn't make it that far.
Well, it's about two people who both pretended like they had it all, but only one person really kind of, sort of, lived up to the dream that they were imagining for themselves, and then John Candy just didn't.
Well, but also...
But actually, I think John Candy was the person who lived up to the dream, because he loved his wife and his family in a way in which Steve Martin didn't, even though he had it.
Well, until the end.
Until the end.
Well, and I would disagree if only, like... Okay. No, it's like an autistic engineer difference, right? No, I don't mean that, like, in, like, a bad way, but, like, Steve Martin...
I mean, put the fucking blocks in the...
No. Steve Martin was a person who loved his family, like, punctuation mark. Like, there was no passion there. He just felt like he loved his family. And then John Candy
showed up. He checked off all the boxes.
Right.
He had a wife, he had a house, he had the picket fence, he had the children, he had, okay.
Then John Candy was a person who felt like he, like, truly had passion because his wife died.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the, like, final scene, which is really what binds us all together. At first, it's like an odd couple sort of comedy, but this ending really just makes it something different, which is when Steve Martin invites John Candy over to his home for Thanksgiving dinner. And even then, I didn't realize this until I saw it before we were recording this.
Yeah.
When they're walking up to the house, like, a less talented director would have been like, okay, the scene's completely silent. All the point is that they're walking up to the home. That's all we need to know about.
Mm-hmm.
Not so in this case, because even when John Candy sees Steve Martin's home, he's like, oh, you're a lucky guy there, Neil. You got it all worked out, which says so much about his character and Steve Martin's character. So even in the final moments, even though traditionally, from a regular standpoint, it's a little heartbreaking, we're still learning so much about the characters.
I agree with you. It's really heartbreaking to see him help him with that fucking case, which is his both emotional and physical baggage that he brings along on every trip. Which, and it's a physical manifestation of that. That's what it's supposed to be. It's really heartbreaking. When he walks through that door and he greets his entire family who is loving and waiting for him to arrive, and his wife, and John Candy knows he will never have that anymore. It's like...
No, the best part is when Steve Martin's looking up at his wife and going, I forget the character name, but she's like, "Dear, I'd like you to meet a very good friend of mine. This is Del Griffith."
She's Mrs. Steve Martin.
Yeah, apparently. Essentially.
He's like, she's like, "Thank you, Mr. John Candy, because you're amazing. You brought up the best things in my piece of shit Wall Street husband. And now I'm here, and he loves me, and thank you."
Oh, geez. Yeah. Even thinking about this scene's starting to make
I'm getting a little upset. I can't even do this. Fucking portion. I don't know if it's because I'm having to hold the mic or whatever, but it's very upsetting. It's really sweet. It's something that as a kid, you think the whole like car catching on fire and shit like that is really funny. But as an adult, this movie rates a whole nother level of feels. And that is, we need to be grateful for the things that we have and even the things that are complicated and take a lot of time and take a lot of effort, we should be thankful for. So, yeah.
You guys ready to wrap this up?
I think so. Okay. If I can just jump on what Candace just said, I think that is an important theme to the movie, but what I also think is important is not just appreciating what you have, but making sure that you open up what you have to people who don't have those things. Because, again, the whole thing about Steve Martin in the end is he's opening his family up to John Candy, who's this homeless shower curtain salesman, which, you know, John Hughes might not be the most skillful filmmaker. He might not be the most skillful writer, but God damn if he didn't know how to create an emotional impact with his audience. And that really just shines through with this movie. I mean, maybe even more so in the way that his high school movies don't to me anymore. I mean, I watched those and like, oh yeah, that was that was how I felt back in the day. But this, I watched this and like, oh God, I can relate to this right now.
What do you think, Jeremy?
I'm gonna be the voice of dissent here.
Oh shit.
Yeah, this movie didn't do that much for me.
What?
Like I said before, both the characters are annoying.
Okay.
I don't know. Most of the humor seemed obvious. Like, the emotional parts did work. I mean, I thought that was pretty much the only parts where it worked, because John Candy was very genuine in those. Yeah, and aside from Owen, the spitting hit guy, who was very amusing. I don't know. Most of it just kind of fell flat for me.
Oh, no. I have to say the absolute opposite for me. So if you watch the podcast beforehand, which was the Short Circuit 2, I expected that movie to be on top 100% because that's what it was for me as a child. And it fell very flat as an adult. I felt the very opposite for this film. As a kid, I remember this being fun and silly, but as an adult, I had a real emotional connection to these characters, and that I know what it's like to not have a reservation and to sleep in an airport and to not have a hotel and the house, and worse yet, to share a hotel with people you fucking drive you crazy, and to have a spouse and to be thankful for them, but yet still not be thankful enough for them. And to appreciate John Candy's character who lost his spouse. And it was really emotional for me. And I legitimately cried at the film. Like, it really touched my heart. And as a kid, I don't remember picking up all those little nuances. But as an adult, you gain all that wisdom and you're like, holy shit, this film is really deep.
We skipped over John Candy's Oscar moment where he's talking to himself in that in the car where he's getting snowed on and talking to his dead wife I wish you were here, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's sad. I mean, like, trust me, I want to shake my husband to fucking death. But then I'm like, oh, I'm glad you're around, I guess. You know, at the same time. So, you know, listen, every person that's married has felt that feeling. And that's why this film, as someone who's a child and who's an adult, has a very different experience. And this is a A-plus film. Done.
Myopia Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sheriff Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reibel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.